Welcome to Radio Who, What, Why. I'm Jeff Scheckman. During World War II, filmmakers became a part of the war effort. Filmmakers like Frank Capra, John Huston, John Ford, and William Wyler would use the experience of war to reshape how Americans viewed war. During the Cold War, films like Failsafe, Torn Curtain, and The Manchurian Candidate, and even The Day the Earth Stood Still, fed our paranoia and got under our collective skin. Even today, elements of Star Wars and The Hunger Games warn of the dangers of despotism. Like some of these other periods, today we face a real but internal existential threat. We can only hope that the filmmakers of our day will use their art to warn and inform us. Until they do, it's worth thinking about those films from the past that might already be a part of our cultural and political DNA, and that might help inspire us, comfort us, agitate us, and maybe even provide an occasional diversion. We're going to talk about that today with my guest, Mick LaSalle. He is the head film critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. He's the author of two books about pre-Hays Code Hollywood, and it is my pleasure to welcome Mick LaSalle to the program. Mick, thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Jeff.
Thinking about this really started, I had a conversation with somebody the other day who had seen Sullivan's Travels over the weekend and thought, Gee, that was an instructive movie for this period of time we're living through. And it really kind of sparked this conversation about thinking about what might be the movies that are important to see and that really might have a profound impact on us in these difficult times.
I think of this as like when you're on an airplane, and there's turbulence, it's nice to have a diverting movie to watch. But if you have an airplane that's like where the turbulence gets really, really, really horrible, it becomes impossible to pay attention to the movie. And so I'm not sure what we have right now, if we have turbulence or we have something really, really, really horrible. So, and because if things are really, really horrible, then it's really impossible to concentrate on a movie, and no movie is going to make you feel any better. And as far as movies, you know, giving us instruction and guidance, movies are usually, well, of course, by necessity, they're about a year behind because it takes about a year to put them together and, you know, write them and at least that much time. But also, too, they tend to play it safe. And so until something is already in the collective mind where everybody just, like, agrees, movies won't express the opinion. That's why, you know, you get all these anti-war movies that are made. The great anti-war movies are made about 6 years after every war. So I don't know if movies are really going to do us much good, frankly. But I tend to be just really pessimistic.
However, the difference with respect to turbulence, just to use your analogy, is that if things get really bad, there's nothing you as a passenger can do about it. But maybe there are things we can be inspired to do or agitated to do, or as Howard Beale says, you know, in Network, get up off of our chairs and go out and say you're not going to take it anymore. Maybe there are things that can be inspiring to us.
Possibly, but, you know, it's much easier when the situation is like we have to go defeat Hitler, because it's very clear, everybody agrees, Hitler's a bad guy, and Hitler's over there, but we're here, and we have to just get it together and do this thing. But it's something else when the problem is internal. It's almost as if trying to use mind control to get rid of an illness. I mean, even, you know, you can use mind, people tell you, you can use mind control to get rid of an illness. Forget about a serious illness, try mind control to get rid of a cold. You know, it doesn't work. And so, I don't know. I mean, everybody, the whole country could be united and inspired, but the people who actually control the country are the people who control the government, who actually control the military, who control the weapons, you know. And everybody could be walking around with an incredibly inspired feeling. The only thing that can change is popular opinion, and maybe in that way, movies can have some use. But even then, things are much different than the movies of the 40s in that, like TV news and like everything else, movies play to specialized markets. And whereas in 1942, 1943, you could say that literally everybody was watching the same movie. Mm-hmm. In this case, you can make the greatest documentary in the world that proves really, really important things, and basically the only people who will go to see it are people who want to believe the contents of that documentary. And so nobody will see anything other, nobody else, the people who need to see it won't see it. So, yeah, I'm just not very optimistic about the uses of anything other than, votes. I don't really have much belief in the power of art. I believe in the power of art to move, but I don't believe in the power of art to have an actual tangible effect in the world. I wish I did, but I just don't.
Is there a value in movies and in art in being instructive, at the least, in understanding how we got here? I mean, a la Face in the Crowd, or maybe better examples than that, and understanding how we could get to where we are.
Well, yeah, except that we already know how we got here. I mean, we already know what happened, and we know how it happened. It happened because of very specific things, and it happened because of a certain mindset in the country. And we can understand it all we like. It doesn't change it, It doesn't change it. So, yeah, I mean, like a movie like Face in the Crowd, Face in the Crowd is actually, in a way, it's optimistic, because in Face in the Crowd, you have a guy who's actually quite talented. Andy Griffith in that movie is wonderful in that movie. If you haven't seen Face in the Crowd, forget about, its instructive capacities. I mean, just watch it. It's a wonderful movie. It's a great, great movie. And it's amazing, Andy Griffith. If you've never seen it, people hear Andy Griffith, they think of the Andy Griffith Show. This movie just shows what Andy Griffith, the direction he could have gone in. He plays a total villain. But in a way, Face in the Crowd is actually quite optimistic, because it basically says, if people only knew what this guy was really like, everybody would turn on him in droves. Well, we sort of found that out, that I assume you're making an analogy between Donald Trump and mm-hmm. Andy Griffith in that movie. Well, we found out what people do when they find out what the guy is really like, because we have the Access Hollywood tape. What they do is they still vote for him. And what they do is they forget about it. they forget about it a month later. I mean, really, it was like a month. So, it's just basically the only way things change is for popular opinion to change. And I don't think that's through art. I think that's through, unfortunately, bad things happening. It's not going to come from art. I may be a film critic, but I don't have illusions about the importance of either what I do or even the importance of what it is. I mean, we could all sit around, watching Saturday Night Live and laughing and feeling like that gives us some kind of comfort. But in the end, that's not going to really do anything. It's going to be other things. It's going to be popular opinion, bad things happening, and changing popular opinion. It's going to be very hard. It's going to be really hard. I'm not looking forward to it.
What have you seen in terms of somebody that sees so many movies and sees the changes taking place, the way in which art and movies specifically have really reflected this bifurcation, this divisiveness, this segmentation that you were talking about earlier?
Well, I mean, for the most part, movies are made by people who are kind of left of center, and the movies are collectively from a slightly or something or a little more liberal point of view, and then you get documentaries, which tend to be very liberal, and then you get other documentaries. These are like very conservative documentaries. So that's the bifurcation there. But when I think about movies in relation to the current moment, the thing that chills me is this. Earlier, I said that movies are always a year behind the times, and that is true, except in one weird way. Movies have a way of anticipating what's going to happen. It's almost like they're like dreams or something. Some kind of unconscious knowing about something. So you'll get movies about, for example, you get movies about the recession before the recession happened. There's a interesting Michelle Phillips movie by Kelly Reichardt, who I I forgot the name of the movie, but anyway, it's about a woman and her dog, but it's all about the recession. It was made the year before the recession. So you get movies that are predicting things. And if you look at what movies are about now, or what the dominant strains of our movies, they're all about life after the apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And they're about civic chaos. So it's about two things, either civic chaos or life after the apocalypse, or both at the same time. So it's almost as if there's some kind of anticipation of a disaster. And, you know, now not always, even when the movies anticipate something, they feel like they're anticipating something, the bad thing happens. For example, in the 50s, you had all these monster movies that were really about nuclear war. You know, they were like forecasts of nuclear annihilation. They were all coming out of that anxiety, and nothing really bad happened, really. So it doesn't mean if it happened, you know, if the movie is anticipated, it has to happen. But it's definitely something that was on people's minds for at least for the full 15 years between 9/11 and 2001 and November 8th, 2016. And you just wonder what's going on with that. Because I'll tell you something, this post-apocalyptic kind of thing was not going on in our movies before then. It wasn't going on, but then suddenly it is. So there's some kind of fear. There's some kind of fear and dread. And by the way, this fear and dread and anticipation of the apocalypse and the sense of living on the edge of things, I think cuts across political opinion. You know, there are people on the right who feel this, as people on the left, that something is like ending, and that something they feel nervous, or that something is about to go, or so, you know. So anyway, hopefully that anxiety is baseless. But that's the thing. To the extent that I look at movies and look at the current situation, it's the thing that makes me feel a little bit sick.
Did we have that kind of fear and that kind of movie during the Cold War period, when we look at things like Failsafe or Strangelove or even Manchurian Candidate? Certainly we had, you know, things like Body Snatchers and The Day the Earth Stood Still, which were reflective in an entertaining way of the paranoia that everybody felt.
Yes, yes, it is. But, you know, I guess sometimes the paranoia is based on something that could actually happen, and I suppose sometimes it happens. But it does have a way of making movies look uncanny when the thing that they're worried about actually does happen, and then you say, "Ooh, look at that, they sort of knew." So, yes, but the answer to that is, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, we look today at these post-apocalyptic movies. What do you see? What does it tell us of these sort of dystopian visions of the future?
Well, I mean, it tells me that there's something in the current psychological climate. Tells me two things. One, that people feel a dread of things coming to an end, but also, and this is the thing that is really weird, almost a desire to see it end in order to see what happens next. I really, when I talk to people I know who voted, shall we say, differently than I did, they tend to say things almost like, "I wanted to see the end of the world." I mean, they don't say it quite that way, but they say things like, "Well, you know, I wanted to shake things up. I wanted to just blow it up. I wanted to just see what happens next. I mean, I wanted to just see something different." So they do tend to say things like that. And, you know, these are actual people I know. It's like, you know, people for like, you know, for your whole life. And then it's like, really? This is my close friend of so many years. It just kind of makes you, it doesn't make you feel too good.
There's almost a religious aspect to it in terms of a kind of end times view of the world.
Yeah, I suppose. But yeah, there may be an element of that for some people. I think it's just a desire to, there's like a weird sense of anxiety. Look, there's something weird going on in our cells when you think about every summer, okay? And this is before anybody thought that we were going to have an election that turned out like this one. Every summer, we just see a succession of very peculiar films that are so so ubiquitous that we don't even see them as weird. We see a series of films in which that depict throughout the summer, over the course of 3 months, all of our cities getting blown up. All of our cities getting destroyed by monsters, the space aliens, one after another. The Golden Gate Bridge usually blows up like two or three times in the course of the summer. New York is always destroyed. This is what we do. And I just wonder, like, imagine what we would think, let's say, of the French if all their movies were about the Eiffel Tower blowing up. If every Italian movie that came out for 3 months had the Colosseum blowing up, we'd start thinking, these people are mentally ill. There's something wrong with these people. These people are not only showing us an anxiety, but they're showing us a desire. There's something here that's weird. And we don't see it because it's us, you know. But I look at that, and then I look at, you know, the current trends in American life, and I say, maybe we're seeing the same thing. Maybe these are similar.
If you look at movies that came out in the summer 10 years ago, 15 years ago, was it appreciably different? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, I'd say go back 20 years ago, and I'd say, yeah, it's appreciably different. I mean, you'd get an occasional movie like Independence Day where things are happening, but it wasn't like every movie. I mean, I'm serious. You know, if we go through a list, it's cities getting destroyed. And this is partly not only a sense of neurotic anticipation and desire, although I think we are seeing that. But it's also a kind of reaction to 9/11, which was a profound national trauma. And we saw, you know, two big landmarks in New York, or you count them as one, just completely get like almost vaporized, like as though we're in a science fiction movie. And, you know, that has an effect, and that has a way of penetrating the imagination. But if you go before that, yeah, you know, you see it. But you don't see it like the way we see it now. And to the extent that it's almost – and the thing is, it's weird. It's like it's no longer to create a sense of fear. It's almost to create a sense of excitement, or it's spectacle. It's not to create horror. It's to create like excitement or an anticipation. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but I look at it and I do the reverse on it, and I imagine that if other cultures were sending us this kind of product, I'd start wondering about the sanity of these people.
You mentioned Italy before. I mean, it's a little like Roman circuses. It's a little like what went on in the Colosseum before the fall of the Roman Empire.
Wow. Wow, yeah, that's interesting. Well, yeah, but, you know, it's going to get worse. I mean, if as the Romans left the Republican era and went into the Empire era, the spectacle got more and more intense. So, yeah, it's hope. So by that analogy, I hope movies don't get worse in the next few years.
Well, we'll keep watching. Mick LaSalle, yeah. I thank you so much for giving us your thoughts and insights and chatting with us today.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to cheer everybody up. You know, I'm like the Paul Krugman of film criticism. I read that guy. I want to hang myself every morning. You know, so I'm glad to be such a, you know, to be such a upbeat guy.
It doesn't bode well for romantic comedies, I think.
No.
Mick LaSalle, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening and joining us here on Radio Who, What, Why. I hope you join us next week for another Radio Who, What, Why podcast. I'm Jeff Shekman. If you like this podcast, please feel free to share and help others find it by rating and reviewing it on iTunes. You can also support this podcast and all the work we do by going to whowhatwhy.org/donate.